Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. Welcome back to We're Nearly Out of Lockdown. This is another Zoom one. Pretty much all this season is in Zoom. Everything's going well so far. I've got a really great guest today, Cara Lizette. Did I say it right?
Yeah, you did.
You've got the coolest name. You've got a film star's name. Do you know? You really have.
Thanks.
So, yeah, thank you for coming on. So I saw Cara's post on Twitter, and you have a blog as well, don't you? And I had to look at that too. And you're very, very honest about eating disorder.
Yeah.
And I feel that it's really important that people, for starters, should feel able to be honest about these things. And by, like, you being honest about it, then it means that people, you know, feel like it's not such so much stigma. So, and that's kind of what this podcast is all about, really. So I just felt perfect person. Plus, I want to redress the balance of men to women. But that's an aside, to be honest. I just want to talk to interesting people. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So, at the moment, I've got the... So, reading from your post, I gather that you're an outpatient now. Is that right?
Yes, as of last week.
So, how long were you an inpatient for?
Well, I was in day patient, which is sort of in the middle. So I was still coming home in the evenings to sleep, but just going to the clinic in the day. And that has been since the start of December.
Okay, so quite a while then.
Yeah.
So you must feel good, but nervous.
Yeah, that's a good description. Yeah, it's scary, but it's good to kind of be moving on to like the next phase of it now. I think I can kind of put, I mean, that was a really difficult 6 months or so. So it's nice to kind of be able to put that bit behind me now.
Yeah. So, and are you a key worker as well, aren't you?
I'm a nurse, yeah.
Oh, I'm a key worker. Not a nurse, though. So. So like, yeah, so now you've kind of come out and you've gone back into work as well.
Yeah, kind of. I've been working from home so far, and I'm still on part-time hours because I've been off for so long. So it doesn't really feel like I'm properly back at work yet, because I'm just kind of catching up on my emails and doing like admin and stuff like that. So tomorrow, actually, I'm going into the office, and that's the first time I'm going to be doing a shift in my office.
Oh, really?
December, so yeah.
Oh, wow. I had 6 months off a few years ago because I kind of lost the plot. And I liked I had the same thing, reduced hours, going back to work, just doing like a few hours a day. I liked that period. That was quite nice.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful. I was quite worried, obviously, about going back to work after having 6 months off anyway, but obviously going to be a nurse in like the middle of a pandemic is quite scary. So it's kind of like double the anxiety of going back than it would have been initially. Well, yeah, so yeah, it's been really weird. It's a weird time to be a nurse at the moment.
So I'm just kind of, as I said before, just interested in your journey, really, of kind of where you've been and how you've got to here. So I guess I'd like to kind of take you back to when you first started having problems.
Okay. So I've always kind of had problems with my body image for like as long as I can remember, really, going back to, I remember being sort of 7 or 8 and being really aware of like what size I was. And then I started having trouble with my eating when I was about 12. And then I was eventually diagnosed with eating disorder when I was 13. So I spent a couple of years under like community child and adolescent mental health services. And eventually then I ended up getting admitted as an inpatient for 7 months. And then I was discharged when I was 16. And then from then I've just kind of gone like, relapse recovery over and over again until today, and I'm now 30, so it's been quite a huge part of my life that I've been doing this for, really.
It's kind of not that unusual though, is it, for people to kind of relapse recover. I mean, I do it with mental health, you know, like I get better and then I properly dip, and I know I'm not looking after myself in the right way and that kind of thing.
Anorexia's got really high relapse rates as well compared to some other illnesses, so yeah, the recovery rates aren't like brilliant compared to other things, but I'm hoping, so this is my third time under the adult eating disorder service, so I'm hoping that this is like third time's a charm, and you know, I won't have to go back there again, because I think they're probably sick of me now. I've been going there for like 8 years, so I'm sure they're kind of thinking that this is the last time they want to see me too.
Yeah, there's no reason why not, though, is there? There's every reason why it can work. It's better to, you know, think about it in terms of why it will not work around. It's funny, I had a guy on recently who has an eating disorder, and he's like, he kind of said, like, you've always got it, you know, but it's always there. You just learn how to manage it.
Yeah, I kind of think of it as being a bit like addiction, where you kind of like, you're perpetually in recovery rather than ever being like fully recovered. And I know other people don't think that way, and I've spoken to people who have said, you know, I am fully recovered and I don't think I'll ever go back to it, but I don't think that's something I can ever say for myself, really. I think it's always going to be something I'm going to kind of have to stay on top of.
Yeah, I view my mental health exactly the same way, you know. It's always there, it's always a problem, but it's just how I manage it, which is the important bit. And and the guy I was talking to said exactly the same, actually. Sometimes start reviewing it in that way is a bit more helpful.
Yeah, and I think it kind of helps you kind of keep your guard up a little bit, really, so that you are more aware of when those symptoms start creeping back in. Because I think if you kind of think of yourself as being completely recovered, you might not be quite so aware of when things are starting to sneak back in. Whereas I think if I do think of it as something that I'm continually managing, I am kind of, my awareness is a bit higher as to when things are starting to slip.
Yeah, I mean, that totally works for me. I see my mental health in terms of addiction all the time. It was thanks to Russell Brown's book that just totally like made it all make sense for me.
Yeah, I've heard it's a really good book.
Yeah, it is good, it is. So when you're in the clinic then, do you go, what's the process for, you know, what do they do with you? Do you do laser therapy?
Yeah, so day patient is, we go in every day you get there and you get weighed twice a week, on a Monday and a Thursday. Then you have breakfast, and then after every meal, there's like an observation period where you just have to stay all together in the lounge and basically just sit still for half an hour. Just so they can keep an eye on you, really, make sure that you're not doing anything you shouldn't be doing. Yeah. And then we do breakfast, and then like a therapy group, snack, another therapy group, lunch, and then another therapy group, and then another snack, and then you go home for dinner. And then every day, like every group is a different group, so you only do one group the same per week and a repeat the following week. So it's quite a good variety. So they do stuff on like body image and like the science behind food and eating disorders and metabolism and that sort of stuff, like motivation to recover, wellness, recovery action planning. So it's really varied. So it's a great program, actually. I'd really recommend it.
Yeah, it does sound good.
Yeah,
I'm thinking all that therapy, that would become pretty heavy. But do you go
tiring?
Yeah, yeah. That people don't realise that therapy is tiring.
Oh, it's exhausting. That's so tiring.
It really is. So yeah. Have you had to go right into, like, why it came about and that kind of thing, if you don't like the deep dive?
So in day patient, you don't tend to do that because it's primarily a weight gain programme. So obviously you're there just to kind of eat and get your weight up to a safe level and then get discharged. And all the therapy you do is in groups. So you kind of talk about things more generically because there's a group. I mean, there's only sort of maybe 5 or 6 people on the programme at once. It's quite small. But obviously you don't want to be going into like your deepest, darkest secrets in all those groups. And they're only about 30 minutes, 45 minutes long. But when you do your individual therapy, yeah, it's kind of all about what the root cause of it is. So the first time I was there, I had CBT and I didn't like it at all because I really didn't like the therapist. And then the second time I went, I had psychotherapy and he was amazing. And I found that really, really helpful. And then I was well for like the longest time I've ever been well for, really. And then this time I'm having CBT again, but my therapist is awesome this time. So I'm finding it really, really helpful. Because I had written it off completely. And when I met him, I was like, I don't want to do CBT. I don't think it's helpful. I've done it before and I didn't get anything from it. But the way that it works is he was my case manager when I was in day patients. So we weren't actively doing therapy, but he was kind of like overseeing the kind of like my care under there. So I've known him since October now. So it's been a really long time. So I think because I started to get to know him really well and I thought, actually, I want to give CBT another try. And he's such a good therapist. So I'm getting a lot of benefit from it now. So yeah, we're doing kind of, it's a lot about what are your kind of core beliefs about yourself and how does that translate into anorexia and kind of keep it going, really.
Yeah, that's interesting because a lot of people kind of have that experience with CBT particularly, I think, and then they write it off. And I still think there's, like, I've had bad experiences with CBT, but I still think there's value in it. It's just, it depends who you're talking to, really.
Oh, it makes so much difference. Like, I don't think people realise, like, how much difference it makes a therapist compared to the actual therapy. Like, in some ways, I think the actual therapy that you're getting, like, the kind of therapy is less important than the person that's delivering it.
I totally agree. Oh, yeah, if you manage to form a relationship with that person, you know, like, just a rapport, yeah. Then you're 90% of the way there. You know, yeah. Listen to them, won't you? But, you know, if you don't like them, they seem arrogant. And, like, therapists can't they? Because they're like, they've got the key to the door. But,
yeah.
Yeah. And then I learned that they don't have the key to the door, that you have the key to the door.
You have it, yeah. My therapist said to me the other day, he was like, it's not your fault you have anorexia, but it is your responsibility to recover. And I really like that because it's not like, he's like, I can't do this for you. I can just kind of give you some tools and then it's up to you to then use them once we're not having, you know, in this hour window where we're talking, you then have to be doing stuff yourself outside of that. And I think that's a really good way of looking at it because I can't, you know, it's been like, 17 years. I can't expect other people to kind of fix it for me now. I need to fix it myself.
Yeah, that was a massive, like, turnaround for me, was that kind of realisation that no one can actually really fix it. And I started to get a lot better soon after that kind of
understanding.
It's like, oh no, I've got to do the work.
Yeah, it's hard though.
I've got to do the work, like, it's hard, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's really hard. All that soul searching.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You said, so did you say around 9 when you started feeling kind of self? Because it's kind of like, it's funny, because I did, the last one I started to get ill around 9. And that was very much about becoming self-aware and feeling like not good, not as good as, or not good enough.
And that was when I started to become really aware of like how much space I took up and how big I was compared to other people, and kind of became really aware of like the language people use around food and weight and diets and things like that. And it was kind of, I kind of grew up in a household where diets were kind of always going on and there was a lot of talk about weight and things like that. So I think, yeah, I became aware of it quite young. And I think once it was in my brain, it was in there. And I always say this now, like, I, things like calorie counting and stuff like that, like, I don't do it consciously anymore, but you can't really unknow the calories in something once you know it. Yeah. So it's like, it's really hard to sort of unlearn all this information that's been kind of coming at you from every angle for your whole life. Like, diet culture's everywhere. You can't avoid it. And it's got just progressively worse as I've got older. So yeah. Kind of like every time I get unwell, I've got like another layer of diet culture to kind of try and overcome each time, which is really hard.
Oh yeah, you think it's awful now, and now everyone's image is everywhere.
Yeah,
like it just kind of like intensifies the whole thing
massively.
And I think, yeah, it's interesting you say if you grew up in a household where everyone was like well into diets and dieting, mm-hmm. and it's almost like it makes it an issue before you even start. It's like,
yeah.
So, how do you feel about that now? How do you kind of make sense of that?
I don't know. Like, I don't think it's anyone's fault. Like, I don't blame anyone for it. I kind of just blame, like, society as a whole for having this fixation on being skinny and about food being good and bad and, you know, holding people kind of to this like moral standard of you're only a good person if you're skinny and you eat fruit and vegetables, but you're a bad person if you're fat and you eat cake. And it's just this awful like dichotomy that is just horrible, and I hate it. So I don't blame anyone, like my parents or anything, for kind of being susceptible to it, because I think everybody is, really. And you have to really actively fight against it rather than, you know, to not let it kind of take over, rather than just not being affected by it. I think you have to make a really conscious choice to try and think, like, actually, I'm not going to give in to that. In particular, I think people are getting a lot more aware of it now, and there is a lot more on like social media of people kind of fighting back against diet culture, and that's really made quite a significant difference to me this time around, actually, is that I'm a lot more aware of when I can see it kind of creeping in, and even sort of the more subtleties in just like after Christmas this year, I went to Tesco, and there was like exercise clothes and like diet cookbooks literally as soon as you walk in. And it's all these sort of messages you're just getting bombarded with constantly. So I think I'm a lot more aware of when that's happening now, and that's been really helpful for me in my recovery.
It's funny because it also then goes along the side, you know, you've got to be thin, you've got to exercise, you've got to eat healthy, but at the same time, you've got to reward yourself with like nice food and alcohol and all these things that are like, you know, it's none of it really adds up. It doesn't really make sense. And all it is people trying to sell you stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. That is all it is. Yeah, so I say the diet industry doesn't care about your health, it cares about your money.
Yeah. I just, a funny thing, I heard this a long time ago when it was like, you know, must have been in the 30s or something, but like these advertising executives decided that the best way to sell products and keep selling products is to tell women they're not good enough.
Yes. Yeah, I read a really good book about that recently, actually, and it's fascinating, like, how far back it goes. And it's almost like it's sort of, yeah, you're right, like advertisers kind of realised almost overnight this was how to sell things, and diet culture's existed ever since.
Yeah. Just tell people they're not good enough and they'll do anything they can to make up for it.
Yeah, and particularly like what science says is that diets don't actually particularly work, and that most people that go on like a diet will end up either the same weight as they were at the beginning or heavier than they were at the beginning. And that's like a way to perpetually keep it going, because you just tell people it's their failure, and it's not. It's because diets don't really work, but you just can keep people coming back over and over and over again to kind of feeding them this lie constantly. So yeah, it's a really toxic industry.
Yeah, you know, like the kind of introduction now of like comfort food.
Like,
where did that ever come from? I feel sad, I need some comfort food. It's like that's just another way to try and sell you shit and
make
you feel like you're not good enough. And that just seems like it all kind of stems around there.
Yeah, because I think actually like food is something that should be enjoyed, and actually, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting comfort from food, but it's that they then make you feel guilty about it afterwards. Like, treat yourself with a bit of cake because you deserve it, and then it's like, actually, you shouldn't be eating that, and then you just end up like overthinking everything so much. So I think actually the idea of like getting enjoyment from food is lovely, but then you've got this whole industry telling you that that's wrong at the same time, unless it's like a salad or something like that.
Yeah. So when you were around nine then, so you started to kind of feel really self-conscious.
Mm.
It's quite amazing how, like, you know, that's certainly something that happened to me. And I'm quite amazed by how regularly people say things like that, how they're kind of, their mental health kind of declined when they started to feel like they weren't good enough or, you know, that they don't match up to others. And like some people bounce back from that really easily and they don't give a shit. And then some people like me, it just invades your thoughts and it's just there all the time then. And then everywhere you look, you're like, I don't add up. I'm, you know, you look everywhere and nothing, you're not good enough anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realise that how much those small things can really just kind of infest your brain.
Yeah, absolutely. It all adds up, doesn't it?
It really does. So did you then just, you know, decide that, what did you start dieting initially? I'm just interested in how that comes from, you know, those thoughts and feelings to then, like, an eating disorder as such.
No, I don't really remember. I don't remember it being this kind of, like, overnight decision.
Mm.
I think it kind of crept in over, like, a series of months. But, yeah, it was so long ago, and I think because I've had so many relapses in that time, it's really hard for me to pick out, kind of, like, where things have started. I just remember kind of getting to this point and everybody suddenly being really concerned, and I don't really remember what had happened prior to that so much. So I'm not exactly sure, to be honest.
It's just it's quite heavy that you come, you know, that you were then kind of admitted quite young, weren't you?
15 I was, yeah.
Yeah. Really scared. That sounds really scary.
Yeah, it was. So I was in the community being seen weekly for a good couple of years, and then I did day patient for 4 weeks, and then they thought that wasn't sufficient, so then I did inpatient for 6 months. It was scary.
Yeah, I had a friend with eating disorder, and so much of it kind of came down to, like, for her, it was all about, control, like, she had no control elsewhere, so she kind of seek control through foods, you know, like, when she would eat it, you know, and then that kind of thing, and, that kind of made sense to me.
Yeah, this is, like, what a lot of the work, like, me and my therapist have been doing over the last, like, few weeks, is that transpires that I'm just like a massive control freak, and that's kind of what, like, the root is now. Is if we can kind of tackle your need for control, then the other things will fall into place a bit easier. So that's kind of what we're working on at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. Because I didn't realise that that part of my problems were almost trying to seek control of my mental health in some way, but not really being able to.
Yeah.
And then I saw a therapist, and he was like, "Oh, you can't control anything."
Yeah.
You can't. You control what you think, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You can't control anything else other than that, and all the time you're trying to, you're just gonna, like, make yourself more real.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, is that, like, I think when you have, well, I guess, like any disorder, but particularly with anorexia, you kind of think that you're controlling your life, because you do have this control over what you do and don't eat and when you eat and what you eat, and actually it completely controls you and not the other way around. And I think, looking back, my therapist said to me the other day, we were talking about control, and I said about, I think people have this perception of me that I've got a lot of self-control because I was able to eat so little. And he said, nobody thinks that someone that can't eat with a knife and fork has got any self-control. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. He's got a point there. So yeah, I think, it kind of gives, like, an artificial sense of control, because you don't really have any control at all.
Yeah. You think you've got control, but it's got control over you, I guess. Just like addiction. You're not. All the time you're doing it, you're not in control.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's amazing. So how's it? It must have impacted really heavily on your life along the way.
Yeah, a lot. So I didn't finish school properly because I was in hospital. So then I went to do, I did an access course so that I could go to uni to do my nursing, and I had to take a year out of that as well because I went back into treatment. And then obviously this time around, so this is like the most severe things have been since I was a teenager, because the other times that I've been treated as an adult, I've still been out of work and things like that. So I've like gone to appointments on my days off and that sort of thing. But because this time around, like cognitively and physically, I became really compromised. So I had to go to the hospital last year overnight for like really severe dehydration. And like, I literally just could hardly string a sentence together by the time I started day patient. So yeah, this is the first time I've ever had to take time out of work for it. And to have to, I've never taken this long out of work since I started working when I was like 15. And it's affected a lot of, like, I had to cancel a holiday. And there was like a training like course that I wanted to look at doing, and I couldn't do it because I knew I was going to be a day patient. And like, it has, yeah, it has had a really significant impact on my life. It's just, I think it's meant that I've kind of missed out on quite a lot of things, really. But also, I do think it's changed me for the better in a lot of ways, because I've learned a lot about myself being in and out of therapy for so many years. And I think that it does make me have like a better understanding as a nurse about how it feels to kind of go through something like this. But if I could take it away from myself, I would.
Yeah, I feel very much like my mental health has, like, I've missed out on so much, because that was all that was really going on. Like, I did things in my life, but like, they weren't really going on. It was all in my head. So I felt so much like I've missed out on stuff. And then kind of, I feel like I'm only just starting to get stuff back, you know, even now, 40, I'm 44 now. So yeah, now I feel like I'm going to have a really good second half of my life now, because I'm kind of on top of it. But yeah, I certainly feel like I've missed out on things like relationships and things like that. I was just so shit at relationships. So because I was so self-conscious, I was like, couldn't do anything, you know? And I often I feel really shit about that. But now I think, no, it's all kind of, I feel like I can turn it all around now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you move forward and you think, I've still got time, still, you know, there's everything to play for still.
Yeah, I feel like I've got a completely new lease of life. Now, this is like the most physically well I've been in probably 4 years, I think. And just in terms of like how, like, clearly I can think now, and like my concentration and like my mood and things like that are so much different. But like, yeah, you're right, just missing out on things. Like I went to my friend Hendu in Amsterdam last year, and I was so close to not going, because I was like, I just can't, I'm so anxious, because I just don't know what the food situation is going to be when I get there, and I can't bear the thought of gaining any weight while I'm there. So I almost didn't go. And then I did go in the end, but I was just so absent for the whole thing while everyone else was having a really nice time, because all I could think about is like, when am I eating next? What are we eating? Where are we going? Am I going to gain weight? Have I walked enough? And that was just a constant loop. So like, I feel like even though I was there physically, like I did really miss out on quite a big experience.
Oh, it's so true. Yeah, because your head's, you're like, yeah, everything's going on around you, but there's a whole little universe inside your brain.
Yeah.
But you can't even start to tell people about it, because they'll get all scared.
Yeah, I'm really lucky, actually. Like, everyone, like, all my friends and, like, my family know and stuff. And, like, obviously, like, physically it got to a point where I couldn't really hide it anymore. Like, I was quite severely underweight, so it was really obvious. But they are all just like really, really supportive. So I couldn't really ask. And like my partner, we've been together 9 years this year. So he's been there for like all 3 times that I've been at the service now. And he's been like amazing every time. I'm really lucky.
Oh yeah, my wife's been had her ups and downs with me. But you know, like, you just think, if they've put up with you for all of that, then like, you're pretty solid, didn't you?
Exactly, yeah.
You're all right. And you haven't got to find anything. I still find myself though. I still have days when, like, if I'm like I'm having a dip in mood, and I'm like, no, no, I've got it. I'm under control, and I won't talk to my wife about it. And then I clearly am not. I'm starting to be unwell, and then she'll start pushing me, and I'll finally just go, okay, right, yeah, my brain's telling me this. And then I feel so much better. And I'm like, why do I do that every time? Why do I not just say?
We did this exact same thing last night. He'll be like, are you okay? And I'll say, yeah, I'm fine. And then we'll probably go through, it'll take maybe like 3 or 4 hours, and he'll just ask me like occasionally over that time. And then in the end, I'm like, no, I'm really anxious actually. Why don't you just say that in the first place?
But the thing is, it's not because you're like, you don't want to talk about it. It's because you're telling yourself that you're all right, you know?
I'm like, if I say I'm anxious, it will make me more anxious. If I just pretend I'm not, it will go away.
No, I do exactly the same. It don't work. So is anxiety quite a key then for you?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny actually, because I've always said for like my whole life that I'm not a very anxious person. And like I go travelling on my own, I do a lot of public speaking, like, so I'm like a big extrovert, so like socially I'll go out and just chat to anyone. Yeah. And so I've always thought like, no, I'm not anxious. And then that's definitely something I've learned about myself over the last like year or so, is that actually like I'm really, really anxious, but I'm so like, I've spent so many years trying to like squash it that I don't feel it like physically really. It's just the thoughts. So the last time, so I've had therapy with just like the generic mental health team as well last year. And what we kind of established from that is that I'm so bad at like registering emotions that I don't realize I'm having them. And I did a lot of learning from that, and yeah, it transpires that I am really, really anxious, like quite a lot of the time. And particularly with like anorexia, it's kind of like quite anxiety based anyway, because obviously you wake up and your anxiety is all about like just constantly around like food and your weight and exercise and any other sort of behaviors that might be a part of that. So yeah, it's, yeah, I'd like to be less anxious than I am, but I think once I'm kind of in a better place with my eating disorder, my anxiety will be a lot lower than it is now.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. I had the similar thing when I didn't think I ever had any anxiety because I'd never had a panic attack. But then I got called out on it by a therapist, and they went, yeah, you're really anxious, aren't you? You're always like this. And I'm like, what? Like what? You know, like on edge, you know, like you can't relax, you can't, you know, like it goes with like mental health, is that you're always kind of, you're always having a little battle in your head, and it makes you kind of hyper aware, I think.
Yeah.
And the anxiety actually kind of goes with it. So that was when I discovered that, yeah, I do actually have a bit of anxiety, not to the extreme sense. That's the thing, when you kind of start having problems like we have, you start to, little things, they're like nothing, can't they? A bit of anxiety. Yeah, I could deal with that.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Yeah, like I think it is all really intertwined with my eating disorder, because I think like I do have really specific like sort of fears, but yeah, like I said, generally like I don't have any sort of like generalized anxiety. Like I'm really sociable and I'm quite happy doing things independently. So I do think when I'm kind of over this hump, so to speak, I think that anxiety will come down a lot.
Oh yeah, you're virtually there though. Okay. I was thinking about it in terms of I've done it. I've smashed it. Easy. What next? That's what I do now.
Hopefully I'll be saying that in a few months, yeah.
Come on, what else? And then you start thinking, oh, and then like I found like a few years down the line of doing a lot of work on myself and having psychotherapy and everything. I found that where I was constantly having to kind of remind myself of techniques and things that I'd learned, like they always said, you know, if you keep doing it, it will become normal. And then, like, one day I was like, fuck, it has actually become normal.
Yeah.
I'm actually like, that's my normal now.
Yeah.
It took like, you know, like 35 years of battering it, but that became my normal. And now it's kind of unusual that I'm the other way around now.
Yeah, it's just a lot of it's practice, isn't it? Is that you can get these skills in treatment, but they're not going to work if you just do them an hour a week when you're with the therapist. The hard work is outside of that hour when you're having to do it yourself. But you're right, like it does get easier and easier. And I think there does come a point where one day you're suddenly like, oh, hang on, I used to get worried about that and I'm not worried about it today. And that's when you start noticing the changes, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I've got to the point now where I'm like, I'm doing really well with most things, and now there's the little things, like drink a bit less at the weekends. You know, just like really little things now. And now I'm like, actually, I really want to do that. I really want to deal with these other little things because, you know, how good could I feel? You know, yeah. there might be a whole other world of good in
there.
You start thinking, because I've done this, now I can do that. It's pretty amazing.
Mm. So
what do you do public speaking then? Is that about this?
Yeah, so it started with, I started working, you know, Time to Change. They're a mental health, like anti-stigma campaign. And so I started working for them in 2013, I think it was. So I used to spend a lot of time going around to like schools and youth groups and things like that, just kind of talking about my story and just mental health in general and trying to sort of break stigma down. And then since I've kind of like gone to uni and done my nursing and stuff like that, I've gone back to uni and done a couple of lectures, and I do some like presentations with work where we deliver like sort of teaching sessions to like parents and teachers and social workers and anyone that works with young people really, or has like a sort of caring role for a young person about children's mental health and kind of how to work with that. So it's been really nice actually, because I quite enjoy public speaking, so it's been nice that I don't do as much actively with Time to Change now, but I've been able to sort of transfer a lot of those skills into my like professional, like into my nursing life, so it's been really nice.
It's it also gives you makes you feel good about yourself.
It's such a good skill to have as well for life, I think, like just being able to like fall back on that, because you do like in education and stuff a lot, you kind of have to do like public speaking stuff. So I felt really fortunate actually, by the time I got to uni and we were having to do presentations, I'd already been doing public speaking for like 3 or 4 years by then. So I felt like it was really nice for me to not be absolutely bricking it when I had to do a presentation, because I'd already been practicing for quite a while. So yeah, it's definitely a skill that I think I'm really grateful that I've developed kind of through working for Time to Change. It's been really useful for me.
I found, you said earlier about like core beliefs.
Mm.
And I remember experiencing core beliefs when I was having therapy and really struggling with what my core beliefs were. Mm. And then I just came to the conclusion it was just about what things do I like, or how would I like myself to be?
Mm.
It was really, really strange and difficult. But I essentially took from it that you should do the things you like doing a lot. And then those things will make you feel good about yourself, which kind of is the opposite to what your head's telling you.
Yeah, that's the hard thing, isn't it? Sometimes you have to, like, pretend to be better to get better.
Yeah,
a while ago it said, like, with anorexia, you have to act recovered in order to be recovered, because you have to eat your meals and you have to stop doing, you know, all the bad things that you're doing, and you have to basically behave like you're well in order to get to the point where you're actually well, which is weird because you're kind of faking it all the way until you make it.
Yeah, but you are, yeah, that's exactly right. That's so true. And like that kind of, and one of my core beliefs, I was like, I don't like lying and I don't like bullshit. And then you're kind of actively bullshitting, you're trying to bullshit your brain, and then your brain and you're a fucking fake.
Yeah.
Just fuck off. I found, have you done stuff about, like, kind of not being, you know, like mindfulness techniques, like not being, like, angry with your brain? Where you're like, ah, it's all right.
Yeah. Do you know what? I hate mindfulness, and I feel bad about it, because, like, I, in work, have to we don't have to, but like I know it's really helpful for a lot of people to kind of like advocate that it's a really useful skill to develop. And I did a lot of it at uni, and like in day patient we did quite a lot of mindfulness, and like, I just can't get on with it. I've tried so hard, and like through like all different kinds of therapy I've tried it, and like it's just not for me at all. I struggle with it so much, and I think it is just because I'm not very good at it. But like it's just the more I try and like empty my brain, the more it goes into overdrive and kind of like makes me think about all the things I don't want to think about. So I kind of prefer to like busy myself, which might not be the healthiest strategy to kind of cope with those things, but it's easier for me to do that than it is for them to kind of just sit there, you know.
Oh, you have to work with what you've got, you know, like you have to, if something works and you grab hold of it with both hands, totally.
Yeah.
I remember like first going into psychotherapy and them saying, like really kind of sitting me down and going, if you're going to go into psychotherapy, like you've got, like, have you got support? Like, you know, who's at home? You know, who else can support you? Because they're like, we've got to break down all of your defences and then build them up again. And I was like, I walked out of there as a shell of a man. Just almost breaking down, because I'm like, fuck, I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah, therapy's hard. Like, it's really hard.
It is. I love it. Like, now I love therapy. Like, I can't wait to have therapy. But I sometimes come out of it exhausted, but more than not now, I come out of it feeling pretty good.
Like, I get that. Like, if I do feel tired afterwards sometimes if it's been, like, particularly difficult. But I think it, a lot of the time I come out of it feeling quite energised and, like, yeah, I'm sorting my shit out. I know what I'm doing. Like, I'm in a good place. And then obviously things go up and down throughout the week until my next session. But yeah, a lot of the time now I do come out of it with a bit of a buzz of thinking, like, yeah, I'm kind of taking back control over the situation and kind of a bit more hopeful about the future, really.
Yeah, I do. But I think, I didn't get really stuck into mindfulness. But that kind of concept of not necessarily sit with it, but don't fight it. You know, not fighting my brain, not fighting the thoughts, just like letting them go. All the time I was fighting them before, I was just making them bigger. And that really helped, that kind of concept, it really, really helped me. Because it's like, and I found that was, like, that's what psychotherapy did, really, was that stop fighting.
Yeah.
All the time you're fighting, you're feeding it. The minute you stop fighting it, that was when I kind of massively moved forward, really. It was like, don't fight your brain.
Yeah.
Your brain's actually just trying to help you out.
Yeah, like a lot of the things that, you know, our brains tell us, they think they're doing it to be helpful, don't they? And it's just about rewiring that and saying, actually, you know, when you're getting really, really anxious about something, it's like, it's okay, this thing isn't going to kill you. I know you're doing this, but actually we're okay. And trying to rewire some of those thoughts that you've been having for such a long time.
It's really tough, though, isn't it? Because, yeah, like for me, I've spent more of my life having those thoughts than anything else. So then you think, oh, right, I can't listen to those. Or no, don't fight the thoughts.
Yeah.
Like a complete life shift, really. But then I say it like that, but it wasn't. It was day by day. You know, it's all... Yeah. You know, little steps at a time, and it was like, you know, when I notice it, I'll say, it's all right, brain, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
It's all right, brain, I know you're looking out for me. God, yes, it's there. Brain.
Yeah, I do always say that I think, like, recovery isn't just, like, one decision that you make, it's just a series of, like, really small decisions that you just have to make, like, over and over and over again, rather than just one decision of, like, right, I'm going to recover.
Oh yeah, it's all just everything's just one day at a time, totally. And like, and accept that some days you have a shit day, but that's not the end, you know.
Yeah, like a shit day doesn't mean you failed, it doesn't mean you're not recovering anymore. It's a shit day, and tomorrow's a new day, and you start again.
Yeah. So, how have you found like on social media and that? Are people generally nice?
Yeah, most of the time. Like, as you get. I find it weird that, like, I have so many people following me because I don't really know why they do it. So it's quite strange because it's happened quite quickly and I don't really understand why. So I still kind of treat it as if I'm just talking to a void of, like, 100 people, and obviously it's quite a lot more than that now, so it's quite weird. So, I don't know, every now and again I'll get, like, I'll get like a weird comment, or like I get a lot of creepy men in my inbox. But like, other than that, yeah, I would say like 90% of people are nice. And I've had some really good opportunities come through social media for like different public speaking things, and like a few different podcasts, and like writing opportunities and stuff like that. So overall, I would say it's definitely been more useful than bad for me.
Yeah, yeah, I think like you have to kind of take it all with a bit of a pinch of salt, you know, like it can be something that can really bring you down if you let it. But I think people are inspired by you, you know. You're kind of, you're getting up there and you're doing it, and you've been knocked down, and but you've got back up again. That's really inspiring, you know, like that's, people need that, you know. They need to be able to hear that, and they need to be able to see it. Like, it's like you're a survivor, you know. Like,
yeah.
Special about that.
And I think you kind of need to, like, with social media, like, some of it can be so toxic. I think you need to kind of make it a safe space for you. So that might be unfollowing people that you think are not very good for your mental health, or, you know, be liberal with the block button. If someone's being horrible to you, block them. If what they're saying is upsetting you, block them. Like, you don't owe people anything on social media at all.
No, it's not a personal relationship, is it? That's the thing. It's like, you don't have to. I find I'm like overly polite, fall over myself to be polite. If someone had a go at me the other day because I kept, like, you know, posting about the podcast, and I put subscribe on it, and they were like, I'm a mental health nurse, and I think I'm not comfortable with the word subscribe. And at the time, I'm like, I just said, oh, well, I'm sorry. You know, like, I don't mean to offend, like, there was nothing, but actually, fair enough, I should think about what I'm putting. And then I'm like, subscribe? It's not prescribe, is it? Like, I don't understand. Yeah, I don't know. It's not subscribe, and yeah.
I think you're never going to please everyone on social media, are you? And I have got a lot better, like, as my following has grown, I've got a lot better at setting boundaries, I think, and kind of, yeah, just like, I just, if someone's horrible to me now, like 90% of the time, I'll just block them. Very occasionally I will give in, and I'll have an argument, and then I'll be really cross with myself afterwards, because I think, what was the point in that? Like, it's so pointless arguing with people on social media. Like, I'm not going to change people's minds as much as I would like to, and I try, and it doesn't get anywhere, because people don't go into arguments on social media with the aim that they're going to change. Like, that's just not how people enter those conversations. So, yeah, now I just block people if they're horrible to me, and it's just like, they're gone straight away. I don't need to think about it anymore, and I would highly recommend that as a strategy, to be honest.
Yeah, they just want attention, that's all. That's all it is. It's like a pretty normal kind of human thing. It's like, you know, it's like swearing at a celebrity. That's why it's attention. I've certainly done that a few times. So we're coming up to our end of the hour. And I wondered if you had any kind of little things that you've learned along the way that you feel, you know, it might be a phrase or something like that, that you could impart on other people that you can think of. Because I've got hundreds.
My biggest piece of advice is that I think if you are struggling, then just don't do that in silence, because I know that every time I've been unwell, without professional help, I wouldn't have got to where I am. And that's not to say that's true for everyone. It might be that you're just speaking out to your friends, and your friends are enough to kind of get you through whatever you're going through. Like, it doesn't always have to be, like, it doesn't mean if you're not getting professional help, you're doomed. But I think if you do kind of suffer in silence, your chances of getting through what you're going through are much smaller than if you're kind of reaching out to other people, whoever they are. My favourite phrase at the moment is, you're never too much, but you're always enough, because I think it's a nice way of kind of thinking that actually you're exactly who you're supposed to be in the moment, and you're perfectly good enough just as you are, and you don't need to do anything to kind of change yourself, because the people that love you for you, and if people don't love you for you, they're not people that you need.
That's a lovely bit of advice. I like that. That reminds me of one that was, you're exactly who you should be and where you should be.
I like that, yeah.
Because you're thinking the whole time, oh, like, for me, I'm like, I should be a rock star. And it's like, oh, yeah. Damn. No, you're where you should be. You're meant to be as you are.
Yeah, I do think life has a way of kind of working itself out.
Yeah, I do as well. Yeah, we do. Well, that's it. Thank you so much, Cara. I loved it. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.